Support comes from Empower Missouri, working to fight poverty and secure basic human needs and equal justice through coalition building and advocacy. Information about involvement at empowermissouri.org/action.
Joe Vollmer arrived at City Hall in an era before cell phones and emails were prevalent. As one of the city's more senior aldermen, he led the board after three of its members were indicted. He also helped draw the map that cut the wards from 28 to 14. But after 22 years, he was ready to spend more time at Milo's, the bocce bar that he has owned on the Hill since 1989. The outgoing 5th Ward Alderman joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need the credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me for the second time as a guest, but first time in the studio today is...
Hi, I'm Joe Vollmer.
He is the outgoing alderman of what is now the 5th Ward, was originally elected in the 10th Ward. And I know this is a departure year for you, but remind people where the 5th Ward sits in the city of St. Louis.
The 5th Ward, you can start at the north end at Manchester, which is bordered by, at that point, Kings Highway and Hampton. And it will head south all the way along Hampton to Rosa Avenue, which is a block past Eichelberger. It will then take Rosa east to Kings Highway, and then take Kings Highway back north, but you take a little veer at Magnolia right near Tiger Grove Park, and we go east again, then north to Tower Grove, and we take in Shaw's Garden. I still call it Shaw's Garden. I grew up there. So, and then you go back up to west to Kings Highway and back to Manchester. So it was almost a perfect square.
The base of power for you, though, has always been kind of the Hill.
It's the area where I've been almost all my life. Yes, it's where my business is. It's where I still live. It's a great, great little part of the world.
And when we last talked about 5 years ago, there's a reason I emphasize that this was the first time in the studio, and that's because 5 years ago was April, May 2020, and we were just coming out of COVID stay-at-home orders. You had just been re-able to open your business, Milo's Bocce Bar. How are things doing today at Milo's?
Things have never been better at Milo's. It's... as every restaurant did, we went through COVID, but my wife and I, Susie, put our heads down, and we basically took the time to tear the place apart and rebuild a lot of the mechanical things and things you need to do. So when it came out, and we were supported very, very strongly by the neighborhood and by all our past customers, it was very, very heartwarming to see that people would go out of their way to make sure that we survived.
And I know when we talked, you were also concerned the Hill's such a social neighborhood. It's built on, community, that it would change during the pandemic when you just couldn't be in community. Aside from the other changes that have happened on the Hill, how did that aspect of it survive?
I guess the best way it's described to me is COVID on the Hill would be like tying an Italian woman's hands together so she wouldn't be able to talk. It's just one part of their life was just taken away because it is a hospitality. The whole neighborhood is built on hospitality. Whether you want to go to a place or go to have fun or go there to get your food to go home and prepare it and have fun, that is what the neighborhood survives and really surpasses most other neighborhoods in is the fact that it is just one of the places you can walk, talk, and have fun everywhere.
Was that able to come back after COVID? Is that sustained?
It has sustained greatly, yes. It is amazing. In that time, we've opened, the people in the neighborhood have opened the Piazza di Alimo, which is a drawing card for most every wedding in the city and county.
It's a beautiful fountain right across from St. Ambrose, right?
Right across from St. Ambrose. It's a gathering place, and so many, they have the chess tables built into and there's kids out there playing chess. It's families getting together. You'll see the gelato parlors right next to them, and they'll go over there, get their gelato, and hang out. People just park their cars and walk. Saturdays are just amazing on the hill. It's that way most every day, but Saturdays are out of control some days. It's just so many people.
So you've always split for the last 22 years your time between being a bar owner, and being an alderman. But in April, you'll go back to being the owner of Milo's only. Why was 2025 the time to depart City Hall?
I actually had considered it 2 years ago in 2022. I would have 20 years on. Susie and I, my wife, looked at each other and said, you know, it's time to, she had a 20-year honeydew list. Because the best part, if there's a great part about being an alderman, honey, I can't do that. I have a meeting. I have to go there right now so that this things get pushed back. But as we all know, the board suffered a mortal wound. Three of the members, the president, the vice president, and another member going, being indicted, going to federal prison. Me being the senior alderman, became the president of the board from May till November. And with the board being reduced at that time from 28 to 14 wards, and looking at with the loss of two of the senior members, again, I sit down before any election, I sit down with my wife, and we said we looked at it due to the reduction, it was a 2-year term. And she said, can you handle two more years? I said, yeah. Because we just needed to do it to make sure the board went through this process to have, not that I'm any great knowledgeable thing, but to have someone who's been there before and tried, because we did have a lot of new aldermen coming in. I think it worked out very well. And I feel very satisfied with what's occurred. Some of these new aldermen are just brilliant. You know, I believe if you check, I might be the only alderman there who I did not go to college. I've been working since I was a kid. So maybe now they'll have a more educated man in my life. My education's on the streets.
Hey, I mean, it takes all types. There's book smart, there's street smart. All types have to be involved there. Was there a moment in the last couple of years that just confirmed that, you know, yes, 2 years is all I've got left in me?
That it is. When we were trying to calculate, when I first got down there, aldermen didn't actually have email and cell phones weren't prevalent. So it was basically phone logs. Going through my phone logs, I think I've, in the first 20 years, had enough trees removed to fill Tower Grove Park and all the trash. And there's nothing better. You know, when I first looked at being an alderman, I asked, why would I want to do it? The question was, do you like helping people? And basically that at the core value of it is you do help people because you're the first introduction to have to any governmental entity. And you have the ability to be one-on-one with them as opposed to a state rep who's gone 5 months sitting in Jeff City arguing all night where, especially in my case, my Facebook page was Milo's. They could walk in and find me, and it was just, and that's the way it used to be in the old days. I'm actually the last of a dying breed. I'm the last saloon keeper who's been an alderman.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Is your wife prepared to have you around slightly more often?
She has a full list of things for me to do. And, you know, Susie and I have been together for, we've got 40 some odd years now, been married for 36, going on 36. And it's, I married my best friend. And we get along great.
As well as any couple does at any point in time.
When you're married to an Italian woman, I've learned how to negotiate a long time ago. Keep your mouth shut and just nod.
Does that serve you well at the board sometimes?
It has many times, yes.
What will you miss most about being an alderman and least about being an alderman?
It goes back to helping people. I mean, there is, and it sounds, I don't know, corny, but you get addicted to it when you actually see something that you've done that can help people. You know, I was always accused, you know, when I first ran, well, you're only going to take care of the hill, but the hill cannot survive by itself. It depends on all the other neighborhoods. My first term was the 10th ward, which actually I had the Morgan Ford strip over there between Arsenal and Filer.
That's an interesting redraw.
That's when gerrymandering was all over the place. Remember, they had the large redistricting after the 2000 census,
mm-hmm.
And that's when they completely redid the wards.
First went to South and the whole,
yeah, there was a lot going on before I got down there. I'm not responsible for any of that. It's inherited. So what the 10th ward was basically the hill and a couple of neighborhoods with a lot of pieces that people didn't want anymore. So gerrymandering, they could, you know, the senior alderman could dump. Because what had happened over there in Marginford was that bridge was being repaired for 2 years over the railroad tracks, and that little strip just completely died. Mm-hmm. And my main concentration for the first few years in office, I sat in people's living rooms in their block captain meetings trying to see what to do. And there was a big resurgence over there. Myself and the at the time, Jennifer Florida, the 15th Ward Alderman, worked very hard. And that place is now a destination location due to the people we could get involved to do it. I'm not by any means taking credit. It's just a matter of finding people to put businesses in there. Naturally, the first thing I went was we found two or three bars to move in there. And that's what neighborhoods are built around, taverns.
Taverns, coffee shops, there you go.
That's it.
So you mentioned it's helping people is what you'll miss the most. What is the one thing that you will just absolutely not miss?
Probably the extra long meetings of sitting and listening to some of my brethren who sometimes are long-winded but mean well. Many are not with us anymore. I've been down there for so long that we have a different group of people. And it's just a time, you know, of when I'm trying to do things. I've heard this speech 1,000 times before. I've heard this so many times before. And when all I want to do is cut to the chase and get something done. And it's kind of like, you know, when you're a pitcher and your curveball's not curve anymore, if you want it to put it in the hands of somebody who has that interest to do it all the time, it kind of wears on you. I'm 66 years old now. I got my Medicare card, running a business with my, you know, which I could not have done without my wife, taking a little burden off of her now and getting the things going back to Milo's is my main concentration.
So the board has undergone a lot of changes in recent years. There are fewer alder people, so wards are larger. There's been a bit of an ideological shift on there as well. Which of those changes do you think really have been good for the board and for the city?
Maybe I'm biased, but I really believe that going from 28 to 14 was a mistake. Not a mistake, but maybe instead of cutting in half, maybe reducing three or four wards, but you're running into a situation like this current election coming up. By rules, you can't chair a committee until you've served 1 year. Well, you have new aldermen coming in, and there's more committees than there are people who can chair them. And you, in the past, when I first got down to 28, you go into committee with 12 members, 14 members, 10 members, which means a quorum requires a minimum of six, seven, or now you have a committee with five members. A quorum of three people making decisions in committee, maybe and not going through everything thoroughly. We had a couple of bills come out where they wanted to do 22 amendments on the floor. And that's not what the floor of the Board of Aldermen is for. That's what committees are for. And you do lose that great interaction of having seven or eight people talking about this and getting something done as opposed to two or three. It's a learning process, to say the least. It's the way what the people voted for, what we've inherited. But I think you lose a lot of the intimacy of being an alderman also. Going from 11,000 to 21,000 people in your ward, it's amazing. It's still always the same 200 that complain no matter what.
But and the same 200 that vote and the same, you know.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah, the apathy is what really scares you in all these things.
Was there a change that has happened at the board that has surprised you kind of in how well it has worked out?
The one thing that has I've been very, very excited about is some of the younger aldermen have come in and their enthusiasm, their intelligence level at doing these things and approaching things in a different way than maybe I would, just due to the way how old I am and how I was raised in the world I grew up in. Again, we didn't have email for probably the first 6 or 7 years I was an alderman.
Which, you know what, honestly, sometimes seems like the way to go about it. Oh, you can't reach me at like 2 o'clock in the morning?
No, well, there's some great stories. When I got to talk with the old alderman, that was my favorite thing. When I first served, of the 28 aldermen, probably three quarters of them had a minimum of 10 to 12 years on. There was five or six that had 20 plus on, where these people coming down, myself having 20 on, but then you're looking at the only other one really is Alderwoman Tyus, who had her hiatus, but she's been down there. She's very experienced, but there's not a lot of that. I was taken aside and shown this is how this goes, and a lot of that has gone by the wayside. There's a lot of new rules and a lot of new things, and Not that they're not better. I'm just not used to them, more than likely.
Because I think it's you and Alderwoman Tyus and then Alderman Cohn. And then there's a pretty good gap between the third and the fourth most senior alderperson now.
Yeah, you're getting into that with, you know, where people maybe only have one or two terms on.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't chair a committee until in my third term, if I remember correctly, because there are so many senior members to do things. And, you know, that's taking seniority away through the rule change with the new president and the new members. You know, was it good? Was it bad? It took a lot of things away because all of a sudden, you know, it as opposed to being the vice president of the board, they decided, you know, naturally through seniority is done by election. That's fine. That's what the board members voted, but we'll see how, you know, it goes in the thing.
What are the benefits of having some leadership positions based on seniority, do you think? You know, there's a lot that can go wrong with it, where people just get in by virtue of being at, you know, there for so long because they just keep getting elected, not that they're actually leaders or respected by their colleagues. But how does having some things based on seniority kind of help the board function as a legislative body?
Well, you keep a broader base of thought going, because what happens is if there's an election for you have people who see this person and that person getting in there, so this agenda can be brought to light, as opposed to, this is the person I have to work with. We don't get along. We don't know each other. And that's what truly being an alderman or being in any political position is. It's not pushing your agenda down someone's throat. It's looking across the table. This guy, North St. Louis is completely different than South St. Louis, Midtown. You know, what can we do to make the whole thing work, as opposed to, what's the agenda I have for some major national view, which is not what we do. And I think a lot of that has gotten lost with this quote-unquote progressive agenda that we've been dealing with, as opposed to the grassroots.
You alluded to this a little bit earlier in the podcast, but you did find yourself as president of the Board of Aldermen as the most senior person at the time when Lewis Reed resigned after facing federal corruption charges. Take me to the moment that you realized you were going to have to be the one to lead the board through its most challenging time.
I was actually at my cardiologist.
I mean, that, of all of the places to get a stress-inducing announcement, a cardiologist is not the worst, but...
I'm laying on my side, my phone's in my back pocket, and he can't do the test because I've all of a sudden my phone's buzzing like there's no tomorrow, and I just took it out and threw it across. After my Doppler test, I went over and took it, and I had over 175 texts and voicemails.
Oh, man.
And at that point... And that's when I realized that my life was changing greatly. And I just went home and I said, Sue, sit down and let's talk about this.
Because you didn't really have I suppose could have said no and it would move to the next person, but not really.
I don't
really
know if that was an option, and I wasn't going to do that to someone. It was just, you know, I was raised, if that's what I'm supposed to do, that you get a job and learn how to do it. And that was my mantra. Whether I was going to carry it, for another election and become the president was something that, had this been 10 years earlier, yes. In my 50s, I would have, as I was looking at myself being 64, I just, you know, is this something I want to pursue? And because, you know, to be president, you would want to do it for multiple terms. And to do it at 68 and 72, if I was lucky enough to do that and win those elections, was not something where I saw my life going at that point. And I just figured to do the best. My job was to make the people in St. Louis believe that the board could still work, that we weren't all crooks, we weren't all thieves, we weren't all taking money from people, and to show them that there is integrity. And I tried to do that and to work with everyone and anyone who I was dealing with. And,
take us kind of inside the locker room as you're talking to your colleagues after you've taken on this role. What was sort of your first order of business and message there to them?
Well, if I had to give my little speech and said, yeah, we were mortally wounded, if I remember, you know, and it was. I mean, this is something people I'd worked with for 20 years, I could not believe those two senior members had done this. It was completely knocked me for a loop. It threw my faith. Oh, you know, I really hurt my soul. to be dead honest, Jeffrey was, I consider, a very good friend. Lewis and I had worked together, and it was the things were didn't always agree, but there was a way to make things better. So my core was to reach out to anyone and anyone on the board to say, you know, if you have something that I can do to make this better, let me know. I have a short term here, and then let's see if we can find someone that we can, you know, put in this post to guide us in the future.
Do you think the board has recovered to make it a, you know, legitimate governing entity in the city? A mortal wound is always going to change things, but has it at least recovered enough of its prestige or I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for here.
Well, it's prestige. I don't know. I'm being very, very honest with the when we've cut down to 14 wards. And again, we go back to the apathy of people. I don't know that we are the entity that we used to be, as far as in the people's minds. And there has been a loss, I guess, with the change in leadership, where the city is suffering by not getting basic things done.
And we'll be right back after taking a quick break.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Parrot.com.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with departing 10th Ward Alderman, departing 5th Ward Alderman.
10th and 5th.
Joe Vollmer. And you decided throughout your legislative career, partially decided, partially got assigned to some big committees that handle big legislation. The budget was in your bailiwick for quite a while. Do we have a sense of how the city is doing financially right now?
Well, we've got money to burn. Problem is, we're not burning it. We have gifts from ARPA money. We have gifts from the Rams money. We have an abundance of things that we could be doing, but we're not. We're making money on the Rams money to the tune, I believe someone says, a little over $1 million a month in interest. So it's not a question of having money. It's a question of having people who know how to use it and put it in the right place. We've all read the stories, and I've lived a lot of the turmoil of just trying to. You can only cut a pie up so many ways. And to do something substantial is what the citizenry, I believe, really wants to see. To see something downtown is in such dire need. You know, having grown up here all my life in the city of St. Louis, that was the place you went to. You know, in the 60s, if something happened, you went downtown to see it, the 70s, baseball in the 80s. You know, when they redid Union Station, redid all these things. And, you know, now I have people coming into my business, to my bar, and they'll have season tickets to the Blues game, and they're not sure that they want to go down and use them. They'll sit in my bar and watch the game on TV, which is very disheartening.
Yeah.
The Hill being the touristy neighborhood it is, I've seen, you know, it's always been that way, but even more so now because people feel it's the safest place they can go to in the city as a destination with their families and hang out, and as opposed to walking the streets of downtown. And this has to change. You know, I miss going downtown like I used to all the time.
So one of the other big legislative things you decided you wanted to tackle was chairing the legislative committee in a redistricting year, and not just any redistricting year, but the year that aldermanic downsizing took effect. I'm assuming this was a deliberate choice. Are you that much of a glutton for punishment?
The way I was raised, hard work. If there's a job to be done, I want to be there to get, you know, to do it. To me, the most important thing was to get it to an alderman representing as many single neighborhoods as possible. You would go to a neighbor association, and depending upon the alderman, I'll mention no names, but if one got to speak before you and they're a little long-winded and you had another meeting to go to, you would sit there and listen, but then answer the same. It was a crossover. And that, to me, just was a practical thing I wanted to do, to keep neighborhoods whole so that you can represent them and know exactly what you want to do in that neighborhood. Because, you know, hopefully we're changing some other things through this with some of the newer aldermen. We're taking a lot of the power of an alderman's hands as far as, you know, an alderman shouldn't decide what street gets paved. He might have a say in it, but it should be the street departments. An alderman shouldn't, we don't need an ordinance to put speed humps in. You know, these are things that are safety measures that should be done administratively through the street department. These are decisions, you know, we decide through our ward capital, Should we put new playground equipment in this park? That should be the parks department telling us we have to do this.
You did mention that, a lot, you know, you saw that the streets department wasn't working for example. And if I remember correctly, part of the reason that they went to the legislative placement of speed humps was to just get them done. If you make it legislative, they have to do it. How much of that is, you know, the aldermen want more power? And how much of it is, if we don't, it just doesn't get done?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, the process was new to us. At first, how it started out. We talked about, and there was no true process. Get a petition was what most of the aldermen did from the people on your street. What it does is actually lengthens the process because they get a board bill through. And then once it's rubber stamped, you know, we're not going to argue about a speed hump in the street committee. I mean, this should be something that they...
I mean, I'm sure there were some people who would, but yeah, you're not going to.
Yeah, but it has not. For the most part, they go through because most everyone wants them. But we're talking, there's a bill that Daniela, Alderwoman Velasquez, has put through. I was working with her on about, in the future, getting a city manager for the city of St. Louis to take appointees out of the mayor's hands and put them into the board's and the mayor's hands to work on something and have some strident, command over things. Right now, unfortunately, we're dealing with things that are the result of appointees that no one had a say over. But a city administrator is someone who would be actually is trained in these jobs. I believe 60% of the cities in the United States with a population over 100,000 people have a city administrator. Kansas City does.
And even smaller cities have city administrators.
Crestwood has one. He spoke at some of the meetings. He's been there, through five or six mayors. So the continuity of what needs to be done is done.
Aside from the downsizing map and the budget, which are consequential pieces of legislation, what is the bill that you think is the biggest thing you've passed in 22 years at the board?
Oh, I've never been I've said it before. My whole reason for going down to the board was neighborhood preservation. I really thoroughly enjoyed growing up where I grew up and wanted that to continue. And so getting things done that made neighborhoods safer in general, being part of the redistricting was huge because it made a great change for how neighborhoods are represented. To me, that was very, very important. Passing budgets, that was like a trip to the dentist.
Unpleasant, but you have to get it done.
That's it. It's a necessity, but you're not going to enjoy it. So, but just dealing with keeping neighborhoods complete. The city of St. Louis, we're basically a small town disguised as a city. I mean, you go to Chicago, there's more people in their Union Station downtown on a Monday morning than there are in the whole downtown of St. Louis all week.
Entirely possibly more in the entire city of St. Louis.
Yes,
but
yeah, it is. I enjoy the small town feel of this. It is something where we don't have traffic jams. If you think you're ever in a traffic jam, of course, I'm never in a traffic jam. I live a block from my business.
You're in a traffic jam talking to all the neighbors.
I drive less than 3,000 miles a year in my car, like most. Yeah, so it's the feel, the ability to do this as you can in St. Louis, if people are aware of that. That's why so many NHL players stay here. It's why so many pro athletes stay here. The Cardinals, people come here, they move here, and they stay here, because it's a great place to raise kids. It's a great place to live. You can get around easy. There's a lot of great food, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We just need to change a little things as far as how we're getting things done and getting people to get things done.
You talked about the city being given gifts, and the Rams money is among that. I think there's $277 million that are available to be distributed. Mm-hmm. And I see one of the more spectacular legislative failures this year was the collapse of the deal over the spending of that RAM settlement dollars. And you are one of the more senior alder people. You've handled those complex pieces of legislation. I'd love to get your take just on what happened there. Maybe not the blow-by-blow of how it broke down, but, how does a deal like that fall apart so spectacularly and so publicly spectacularly?
Of all the options that were put forth, through the two different board bills. One had teeth to it that was going to make something substantial. With the Greater St. Louis and the downtown, you're talking about matching funds from the private sector. You're talking about doing something that people can see, people can feel, that people want. And an opposing bill with things that are great in their ideas, but is getting them established and doing them something that is really what you should be doing with this amount of money when we are spectacularly known for not following up on getting these things done as far as programs and helping people. This is money that needs to be put into, boots on the ground, something we can see. And to my understanding, I was in a meeting in the president's office with other aldermen, Alderman Oldenburg, people from Greater St. Louis, the mayor's office, and my understanding was that before the big fallout on this, that there was an agreement that $100 million would go to downtown, which would end up being anywhere from $100 to $200 million match from Greater St. Louis, and that there would be money set aside for this program, North St. Louis, that, and that was a win-win. That was a Friday afternoon. By Monday, that money was cut to 74. By that Wednesday, I believe it was cut to 50. And this is all at the behest of our president of the board, who doesn't believe in helping corporate people out. It's amazing. And that's where it fell apart. It's all you got to do is watch the meeting. You had a majority of the board did not believe this should happen. And if we wanted to get the one thing done that everyone wanted to happen, but even when that fell apart, I believe Narayan said it best, Alderman Narayan said, the best thing we can do today is nothing. One person can change everything. What they say, that Cinderella, one pair of slippers can change your life, but what happened was an agreement that we all thought was there fell apart. And when that's not believing in the art of negotiation, when you think that your idea is more important than everyone else's idea, that you'll push it so far that you'll destroy what could have occurred. And who suffers? Well, downtown's suffering from it, because the belief was that we didn't need to, these people don't need that money. Well, yes, they do. And as representatives of these people, my ward will never see any of this money, but my people who live in my ward love downtown, mm-hmm. and miss downtown. And that's part of their city. A lot of people in my neighborhood are like me. They were born there and they still live there. We're in our 60s and we miss what St. Louis used to be. And St. Louis is a downtown that thrives.
You won't be around to deal with it, but what do you think the fallout could be in the 2025-2026 legislative term from the collapse of this deal?
Well, I believe that there are a lot of aldermen who have changed their thought process about what they believe in down at the board. Some of the younger members who've been down there just a short time maybe are thinking completely different than they did when they first arrived. I've been having conversations with them, talked to them greatly, and they're seeing the need for what we are missing.
What advice do you have for your replacement at the Board of Aldermen or any of the newer alder people in general?
Well, Mr. Devote, who's running unopposed, I know very well, and we're on the same page. So that is something we've talked about, and I feel very comfortable in doing that. And the neighborhood, most of the ward feels comfortable. There's a reason no one's running against him. I think we've created a model, for that ward where people understand how to get things done, and there's a reason our neighborhoods thrive over there. So as far as other ones, I've tried to stress that to the newer ones over the bad. That was one of my reasons for staying, to make sure that there was some sort of succession where they could see what you can do and what you can't do. I've sat and had discussions with Alderwoman Velasquez, Alderman Browning, Alderwoman Schweitzer, Alderwoman Sanye, where they've taken the time, let's sit down and talk. These guys are highly, highly educated, but they're willing to learn even more. And I find that very, very enlightening. And I feel very secure especially over the past year, where they've come around and see that there's much, much more than what they've learned in school that they can learn.
Those street smarts that you were talking about a little bit. So April 14th, sine die.
What is your
sine die in Italian. What is your plan for April 15th, 2025?
I have to wake up and go to work.
As you do every day.
But the first thing I'll be doing is changing my voice message on my cell phone and putting Mr. Devotee's number on there. Please call this number. My email, I believe, at City Hall, they're already in the process of disconnecting, I've been told. But I'm sure my phone's still going to ring. I'm sure that people are going to say, oh, come on, you can still do this. But it is just a matter of, I'm sure for the next few months after that I'll still be handling a few things. And when people can find me at the tavern, they're going to just drop, like they always have, drop notes off. But I'll be able to say, I'll call Matt and say, here you go, buddy.
Politically Speaking is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Outgoing Alderman Joe Vollmer, it was a pleasure.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.